Good afternoon. We're about ready to begin here. If you find your seats. Today I have the privilege of introducing a wonderful woman from Belfast, Northern Ireland. Her work as a prison minister led her into Christian Science practice, and she was a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship for 4 years, and has given lectures and informal talks around the world. Today she joins us in an informal talk on helping young people meet the challenges they face. Here is Mrs. Myrtle Smith.
You like the gear? All American girl? Well, I'm just going to sit for a minute and see if I see any familiar faces. Yeah, I do. All right, you can look at me as well. Well, isn't this nice to have a special meeting to talk about our young people, who are the Christian Scientists of tomorrow. But I'm not just talking to young people. I'm talking to... Oh, I just saw somebody I know well. I'm talking to the young person in you. I hope you brought the child in you along today. Because our Master said, except you become as little children, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven is a beautiful, peaceful state of consciousness, and we can't enter it until we become childlike. And when we become childlike, we understand the problems of our children better. And little children do have problems. And little Christian Science children have everything they need to meet those problems and those challenges. So I hope that what they hear today will help them and will help each and every one of you and me to go out into the world and meet the challenges for all young people. Because the problems that our children have are world problems being projected on their thought as their problem or our problem. But remember, it's a world problem being projected as your thought. Do some people need to move up a bit? Can you hear all right, by the way? No, you can't? Oh, okay. Is that better? Yeah. Does that sound better? If anybody needs to move their seat, you know, that's okay. Well, I've been having a really nice time with the young people here today. Mind you, they were a bit shy about asking questions, but they did ask a few very interesting ones. And so the rest of our time is dedicated to answering them. But I think that they want answers through parables. They like the little stories that I tell in between. Okay. I want to start with, when I had lunch today in a friend's house, she very kindly gave me a room all to myself. And when I was in there, I opened her prose works at this article entitled, Voices Not Our Own. And it's about the time that Mrs. Eddy was a young girl and she heard God's voice speaking to her. I want to read some of it to you. Many peculiar circumstances and events connected with my childhood throng the chambers of memory. For some 12 months, when I was about 8 years old, I repeatedly heard a voice calling me distinctly by name 3 times in an ascending scale. I thought this was my mother's voice and sometimes went to her, beseeching her to tell me what she wanted. Her answer was always, "Nothing, child. What do you mean?" Then I would say, "Mother, who did call me?" I heard somebody call Mary 3 times. This continued until I grew discouraged, and my mother was perplexed and anxious. One day when my cousin, Mahatabel, is that the way to pronounce it? Mahatabel? Humpton was visiting us, and I sat in a little chair by her side in the same room with grandmother. The call again came so loud that Mahatabel heard it, though I had ceased to notice it. Greatly surprised, my cousin turned to me and said, "Your mother is calling you." But I answered not, till again the same call was thrice repeated. Mahatabel then said sharply, "Why don't you go? Your mother is calling you." I then left the room, went to my mother, and once more asked her if she had summoned me. She answered as always before. Then I earnestly declared my cousin had heard the voice, and said that mother wanted me. Accordingly, she returned with me to grandmother's room, and led my cousin into an adjoining apartment. The door was ajar, and I listened with bated breath. Mother told Mahatabel all about this mysterious voice, and asked if she really did hear Mary's name pronounced in audible tones. My cousin answered quickly, and emphasized her affirmation. That night, before going to rest, my mother read to me the scriptural narrative of little Samuel, and bade me, when the voice called again, to reply as he did, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth." The voice came, but I was afraid, and did not answer. Afterwards I wept and prayed that God would forgive me, resolving to do next time as my mother had bidden me. When the call came again, I did answer, in the words of Samuel, but never again to the material senses was that mysterious call repeated. I think it's lovely for us to be reminded that Mrs. Eddy had an experience like this in her childhood, just as Samuel had. Now, she was 8 years old. And a child at 8 years old can have spiritual experiences. Our master was 12 years old when he went away from his parents and went into the temple and was speaking with lawyers and doctors and all sorts of people. And when his parents chastised him, he said, "Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business?" Now he recognized from he was 12 that he was a child of God, the son of God, and that he had work to do for his father. And I think maybe Mrs. Eddy recognized that too. And you know, we need to recognize that in ourselves. If you don't recognize that you are the called of God, that you are the child of God, that he is calling you to do his work, then you won't be able to do his work. You have to recognize the calling. When I became a Christian Scientist, it was a wonderful thing for me to find out my real identity, because I was the last of six children, and my mother used to say that my father was unemployed, and she didn't know how she was going to cope, and another child was too much for her, and I used to be hurt and not wanted. But when I became a Christian Scientist, it was a wonderful thing for me to find out that I was a child of God, that he knew me long before I was ever born, and that he had a purpose for my life. He has a purpose for all our lives. He has a purpose for the life of all these children who are here today, and he has a purpose for each and every one of you. But if you don't recognize that you're the child of God, you won't recognize the purpose, and you won't fulfill your purpose, and that's why you'll feel dissatisfied with life, because you haven't really identified yourself correctly. Jesus kept doing it. That's what enabled him to do the healing works that he did. He said, "I and my Father are one, and I can of my own self do nothing." He acknowledged the truth about his own identity, which enabled him to do the healing works. So we have to acknowledge that too. And our little children are able to do that from their very young. When my son Paul, who recently got married, was 3 years old, he woke me up one night crying, and he said he had a sore ear. And I put out my hand and I touched his face, which was very swollen and very hot. And I brought him into our bed and he couldn't sleep there. And finally I had to get up and nurse him. And I was knowing the truth as best I knew how. But this situation got worse and this child was in terrible pain. And the next morning I called a practitioner and asked her to pray about the situation. And she said she would, but 3 days passed, 3 days and 3 nights when I didn't get any sleep. This child wouldn't let me put him down. I just nursed him all the time and he couldn't eat. Excuse me, is the sound all right? Okay. And he couldn't eat or sleep or do anything, and I was feeling rather wearied myself about this because I had my other children and my home and everything to care for. But on the Sunday morning, the other children went to Sunday school, and it was a cold winter day, and I had a big glowing fire on, and I put Paul down on the settee, thinking maybe he'd get asleep. Now the house is nice and quiet, and maybe I'll get asleep. So I sat down on the chair and put my legs up on the stool, was closing my eyes when Paul suddenly said, "Mommy, how did I get this sore ear?" And I was so tired, and I remember thinking, what question? How did he get this sore ear? And then I said, "Well, Paul, Ella told you that you had a sore ear. And then you come into my bedroom, and you wakened me up, and you told me you had a sore ear. And I believed it. And then I wakened your father up, and I told him that he believed it. And the next morning, we told all the other children at breakfast, and they believed it. And I suddenly realized why that's what I've been doing. I have believed this, and now I'm trying to heal it." So I said to him, "Well, Paul, I've made a big mistake. I've been believing a lie about God's child." I said, "Ella told us all this, and we've all fallen for it." He said, "Well, what do we do about it, Mommy? How do we get Ella out?" I said, by saying, "Listen, enough is enough. We're not going to believe these lies anymore. This child is the child of God. He's the perfect child of God. He's without pain. He's without discomfort. He's without inflammation. He is everything that God is. He's beautiful, beautiful, whole, and satisfied, and joyous, and complete. That's how we get it out." He said, "That's good, Mommy. Open the door and kick it out." So I opened the door and said, "Right, Ella, get out. Give it a big kick." And I came in, Paul was clapping his hands. He said, "That was great, Mommy." He said, "Have you any beans? I'm hungry." And he ate a whole tin of beans and toast, and that was the end of the problem. But it was a great lesson to me. I didn't realize I was doing this all the time. I was accepting the story that somebody told me, or a story about myself, and then I was trying to heal it. That's not the way you heal in Christian Science. You have to know that there's nothing to heal. Now, our master said, "A little child shall lead them." And that little child led me in the right direction. He showed me how to really pray about this situation. Now, another story of my family. It's nice for me to have an opportunity to tell all the children's stories today. When Tracy, my youngest daughter, was young, she always wanted to be as grown up as the rest of the family. And she got very frustrated that she couldn't do all the things that they were doing. And she would always want to go out with the older children, and they would say to her, "You can't come, you're too wee." So when I asked Tracy, who was then about 3, to do something, I would say, she would say to me, "I can't, I'm too wee." And this was her byword. She was saying this all the time. Well, one day, I was baking pies in the kitchen, and it was beginning to get dark, and Tracy came in, and she said, "I want to go out to play." And I said, "Well, that's all right. Your sisters are out there. Go and play with them." And she said, "Well, I need you to tie my shoelace." And I said, "Tracy, my hands are all flour, and I can't." I said, would you go over and switch on the light for me? It's getting dark." She said, "I can't, I'm too weak." And I said, "Listen, Tracy, Ella always says, 'I can't,' and 'I won't.' But God's child says, I can and I will. And she looked up at me and she said, all right, my God's child, I can and I will. And she got my rolling pin and she went over to the switch of the light, stood on her tiptoes and flicked up on the light. And then she sat down on the kitchen floor and she tied her shoelaces. And she didn't do it very well, but she did it. And for about a month, she went round the house. Everything that before she said she couldn't do, she was saying, I can, I will, I God's child. And you know, she became the most independent of all my children. And we adults, we need to say that too, when we say, I can't. I can't go that other mile. I can't walk another step. I can't do another thing. Just remember, I, God's child, I can and I will. And you children can say that too. If your mother's telling you to do something or your father, don't keep saying, I can't and I won't. You're God's child, so you can and you will. And see what a difference that makes in your life. And I told you about Tracy when she was this little practitioner, didn't I? And she, no, I didn't tell you. It was the children I told. Sorry. Do you want to hear it? Okay. Well, I was telling the children that when my children were young, I had a broken home. My husband didn't give us any money with great difficulties. There was a lot of violence in the home. We used to come and break up our home. And they were at a school for Christian Scientists in England. And I always had to find their fares home and their clothes and their uniforms and their rent. And I only had the money from my practice, which was not very much to live on. And so I began to feel very burdened by all this. And I was not feeling well for quite a while. And then one day I realized I was taking this burden on my own shoulders. So I said to my children, you're all Christian Scientists. You go to the Sunday school. You know how to give treatments. I've showed you how to do that. So you have to pray with me about these situations. So they would all go to their bedrooms and read something, study something, and write things down. And then we'd have a meeting about 4 o'clock, and we would all discuss together what we had learned. And one time I was feeling very down and very discouraged. And I was crying and upset. I didn't know where money was going to come from and all sorts of things. And Tracy, the youngest one, went into her bedroom. And I saw that she was bringing the books and the concordance and the hymnal and everything. And then she was only about 8 years old. And I went in and I was lying down on the bed and I saw a little piece of paper come under the door. And I picked it up. And she had written the words from one of our hymnals, one of our hymns. And it said, your mission is to heal. And I was so grateful that that child at 8 years old recognized what my problem was. That I simply had to acknowledge that I was the child of God, that my mission was to heal, and that everything I needed to make this mission a success was already present and in operation. And it doesn't matter if that's money or food or clothes, or peace, or whatever. It was present and in operation, just right where I was. So Tracy became my little practitioner. And often when I was on the telephone, speaking to a patient, and I would come off the phone, she would repeat things to me or tell me things that she had read, which she thought would help that person. And, well, all my children were very good at doing that. And I was telling the children today about one day we were having one of these meetings, and I was feeling a bit distracted. I didn't have the money to send them back to school or pay the rent or anything. So I said, let's have one of our little meetings. You all go into your rooms and study, and we'll meet at 4. And I went into my bedroom, and I noticed that the three girls went into their bedrooms, but my son Paul, who was about 15, went out into the garden and started cleaning his bike. And I'm watching him through the window, and I'm becoming more and more agitated every minute and saying, Does he not care? Is he not going to take on any responsibility in this family and so forth? I was getting quite tight. Anyhow, I saw him looking at his watch, and it was 3:55, and he suddenly went into his room, was there for 5 minutes. We had our meeting at 4. We sat down, the girls all told what they had done. What one had worked on supply, one had worked on home, one had worked on father and mother, and I had worked on unity. And I said to Paul, "And what have you worked on?" And he opened his Bible and he read the story of Solomon. When God asked Solomon, "What do you want me to give you?" Solomon said, "Give me a wise and understanding heart." And I felt so humbled that my son recognized that we only needed wisdom and understanding, that he didn't have to pray for ours to see that. He already knew it. So that problem was solved. Many problems in our family were solved like that. And my daughter, Leslie, when she was about 8 or 9, she had a little friend that she played with every day. And one day she came in and she said, "My friend wasn't at school today because she's not well." And she said, "Can I bring her into our garage to play? Her mommy has let her come out for a while." And I said, "Yes." So they went into the garage. And I noticed that Leslie brought all her books and sentinels and everything. And this little girl was not a Christian Scientist. And I was trying not to listen, but I was very interested as to what was going on. So anyhow, the little girl's mother came to the door and wanted her to come home for tea. So I called them. And the little girl said, "Your Leslie was praying for me. And she said she's a practitioner, and I'll be better tomorrow morning and I can go to school." And I said, "Well, that sounds great." So Leslie came in and I asked her what she'd been doing, and she told me how she'd prayed with all the things she'd learned in Sunday school. And she read her 3 sections of the lesson and she said to her, "And that means you." And the next morning the little girl called for her for school and she said, "Look, I'm all well, I'm all better." And so that was another occasion that one of my children was a little practitioner, which shows you can do it at 8 years old or 9 years old. I had another friend who was going through a hard time, and her husband had lost his business, and we went to visit them, and I took my daughter Leslie with me, and she heard the conversation, and she didn't say much, and on her way home, she said to me, I'm going to pray for this baby." And I said, "Well, I think that's very nice." And I didn't ask her how she'll go about it. But the next morning, she came down with something that she had written out. And she asked me to pass it on to her friend. And it was from miscellaneous writings. It's entitled "Angels." "When angels visit us, we do not hear the rustle of wings, nor feel the feathery touch of the breast of a dove, but we know their presence by the love they create in our hearts. Oh, may you feel this touch. It is not the clasping of hands, nor a loved person present. It is more than this. It is a spiritual idea that lights your path. The psalmist saith, he shall give his angels charge over thee. God gives you his spiritual ideas, and in turn, they give you daily supplies. Never ask for tomorrow. It is enough that divine love is an ever-present help. And if you wait, never doubting, you will have all you need every moment. What a glorious inheritance is given to us through the understanding of omnipresent love. More we cannot ask, more we do not want, more we cannot have. This sweet assurance is the peace be still to all human fears, to suffering of every sort." Leslie wrote that out on a card, and she painted little pictures of butterflies and everything. My friend still has that card, and she said that that helped her more than anything that anybody else had said to her, because a little child said, said it, a little child thought of this and prayed about it. So all our little children can do these things. I was asking the young people questions, and they asked some, but not too many. But there was one question asked to me afterwards, and that is, how do you cope with social drinking and socializing and the life that young people seem to have to live today? That if you're not doing these things, you're boring, you're square, and nobody wants to be in your company. So it's very difficult for our young children, our young people, I mean, to have to learn to cope with this. And it can be difficult for adults as well. Well, that made me think of a story that I heard last year when I was in Canada. This man who told me the story came from Belfast in Northern Ireland, but has lived in Canada for many years. He said that one day, when he was married, he had five children, his telephone rang, and a man said to him, "You don't know me, but my wife is in a mental institution, and they said she could never get out of there, and we have three children." And he said she's locked up in there. She's like an animal in a cage. She's been in there for 5 months. And the only words that she says are your name. And he said, we didn't know anybody by that name. And we asked all our friends, do you know anybody by that name? And they all said no. And he said, finally, last week, I was in town and I met a school friend of my wife's, and I asked her, did she know anybody by this name? And she said, yes. I remember one night when we were teenagers, we were at a party. There was a lot of drinking at this party. But there were two young men there who were brothers, they were twins, and they were not drinking. And she and her friend, the woman who was in the hospital, would go up to these boys and tease them about not drinking. And asked them, why don't you drink? What's the matter with you? And they said, we don't drink because we're Christian Scientists. And we don't need to drink to enjoy ourselves. We can enjoy ourselves without that. And this girl thought they were a bit weird, but she remembered that her friend had kept asking them questions about Christian Science and their church and what they believed and so forth. Now this man, this Christian Scientist, remembered the party, but he didn't really remember the girl. He remembered somebody asking questions. He said they always got us asked questions like that at parties. But he and his brother took a firm stand not to drink. Anyhow, this man asked him if he would be prepared to go to the hospital and visit his wife. So he did that. And she was in a bad way, and he tried to talk to her, and there was absolutely no response. Finally, he was about to leave, and he said to her, by the way, I am Brian so-and-so. And her eyes lit up, and he said to her, do you want me to keep on talking to you? And she said, she nodded her head. So he began telling her that she was God's child, that God loved her, he was pouring in these truths. The doctor said, well, we're delighted. That's the first sign of response or life that we have seen in this woman. Will you come back again? He went back every Saturday for months, and she began slowly to get a little better. And then the doctor said that he would like to try her outside, but she couldn't go home to her husband and children. She could be dangerous. And asked this man, would he take her home? And he said, well, I'll have to ask my wife because we have five children too. And his wife said, I think we should take her home. So the doctor gave him a pile of drugs and said, now you have to keep this woman drugged. She has to be kept under sedation. She could be dangerous. But he took her home, and he said she was so thin, she hadn't eaten. They were feeding her sometimes through a tube. She was so very thin. And they had a big rocking chair in their house. And he took her on his knee, and his wife wrapped her up in a patchwork quilt. And they sang to her, and he kept telling her that God loved her. And he would rock her in the chair until she would fall asleep, and then they would put her into the bed. And she stayed there the whole weekend. He never gave her any medication, any drugs, and she didn't need it. And very soon she was off all that medication, and she was out of there. She wasn't allowed out of there. The doctor said that once someone signed you in, you had to be kept there for life. And although she was a young woman, she couldn't get out. So this man told her not to be discouraged, that God takes us all the way, and there was a right solution to this. And then he remembered the Christian Science nursing home.